To the end zone, Moore, touchdown.
With time, throws it short, Foreman with the catch, Foreman to the end zone for the touchdown. Warriors' long pass of the day is 15 yards, and it's intercepted, picked off by Jalen Johnson. Johnson, untouched for the touchdown.
What's up, Bears fans? Welcome in another Friday edition with you guys. Off last week to celebrate Good Friday. I hope you guys had a week of refreshment, maybe some family time to spend together. I know in my household, we celebrate the resurrection of Christ. So I hope you guys were able to enjoy last weekend. And nice Friday night here after the week off. And we got some plenty of topics to discuss tonight. We got a guest coming on later in the show. Should be a great Friday edition, Jeff. As always, I'm your host, Tim Willis, and my co-host to my right here is my brother, Jeff. Jeff, want to say hello to the folks and tell us how you're doing this Friday evening.
What's up, guys? It's good to see everybody here. The first thing I'd like to say is I'd argue that I'm the host and Tim is the co-host of this show, but I think that's kind of an obvious point. But in any case, you know, it's good to see everybody here. We're going to have a big show tonight, packed, lots of stuff to go on. Big NFL draft news, I guess you should say. I don't know if it's big news, but it's a lot of NFL draft stuff to discuss. What the Bears might do with number 9 after number 1. What they might do later on in the later rounds of the draft, since they don't have a pick on day 3 right now. And we also have a big special guest tonight for you guys. It's our first guest we've had on twice. So it'll be fun to have him on again, and we'll have some questions for him about Notre Dame football that you guys will probably like if you're Irish fans like we are. And some of those questions will be directly related to the Bears in the draft. So I think you'll get it. You'll enjoy this in any case, no matter if you like the Bears or if you're a Notre Dame fan or not. So lots of stuff today. So without further ado, let's just kind of jump into some stuff that's been going on lately. Last week we didn't have a show, as Tim said, because of Good Friday. So we didn't get a chance to talk about some of the things that happened in the last couple weeks, one of which was the press conferences that Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus had after all this stuff has happened. So after all the things have happened with Caleb Williams and meeting with him and whatnot, and now we actually have a chance to have seen in some real reports about how the guy is as a person, as a leader, as a teammate. And I guess I'll just jump into it right now. There was I guess it was an interview or whatever it was on Waddle and Sylvie where they were discussing what happened with Caleb Williams and his top 30 visit with the Bears. And apparently the Bears had some, not just their executives there at the meeting, but also some of Caleb's future teammates were there as well. Some of the leaders, Tyreek Stevenson was one of them mentioned. DJ Moore was one of the mentioned players. And we're there for this meeting with Caleb. And apparently, not only did the players participate in this meeting, but apparently the executives sat at a different table. The players sat by themselves and they congregated together and got to know each other a bit, which is significant to me because, I mean, as we've been saying on this show for several weeks now, really probably months, is the person, the character, the football person is all huge to this organization, the leader, the teammate. And what we're seeing by all accounts right now is a lot of rave reviews. And there has been some speculation in the past, and we weren't exempt from this ourselves. We've mentioned that there were some things that have been set out there that were a little concerning about Caleb, some of his, you know, football character, some of his personal character things. We didn't get details on it, but there were some things that were said. And we mentioned it on the show a couple of times, but from what we're seeing, guys, right now, from all the reports that are out there, from what the team is saying, this kid has everything you want in your leader. the tape doesn't lie. That's an obvious thing in and of itself. We've been saying that for a while now. You watch this guy play, and the talent is it's undeniable. So the fact that they've got all this going for them right now, they walked into a situation where they have an opportunity at this kid, basically gift wrapped to them. This is a pretty awesome opportunity here. And I really do believe that we have a chance here to mold this quarterback in a way that the Bears haven't been able to do with their rookies in the past. And before I dig into this too much more, get some of Tim's thoughts on it, I did want to mention that in Paul's press conference a couple weeks ago, before we had a chance to talk to you guys, because we had the week off last week, he had mentioned something. I've got a note of it here I wanted to say to you guys. He'd mentioned the timeline, and this was something that I'll admit that I was a little wrong about in the past. I'd said on a show before that I didn't think that the rookie quarterback timeline argument and having to pay Justin was as big of a deal as it had been made out to be. And the reason that I had argued that was because I didn't think that you would necessarily have to pay him top dollar right away was number one. And also, I didn't think it was as big of a deal to have that much more cap space to build around him right now. Well, the Bears didn't see it that way. And Ryan Poles came out and said it himself. He said this rookie timeline thing is a real deal, because what happens here now is you don't have to worry about paying bigger money to a quarterback, because even if you place the fifth year option on Justin, it was around $23 million. If you pay him and extend him, you're going to have to pay him more than that. If you have a rookie quarterback on a 4-year contract here, it's significantly less, and you can pay more guys to build around him and make him better, so that when it finally does come time to pay the quarterback, which Poles mentioned in this presser, now you can kind of start to worry about giving him the money, and he can start to lead and be the reason that you're winning now. He's the reason why things are happening, instead of you have to build the support system around him to make sure he becomes that. So the argument there makes total sense. I mean, you start to build around him when he's young, you put the pieces around him when he's young, you develop him. And then when he gets to that point, now he can start to lead, and you can start to allocate your resources towards him and not so much towards the other players around him, because he's going to be commanding of that money. So it's an interesting point. It's a good point. And one that, I admittedly was wrong about. And the more I hear about it and the more I think about it, it makes much more sense. And I can totally see the reasoning behind it. So that obviously wasn't the only reason why this decision was made, but it was a big part of it. And the fact that you do have this kind of talent that's going to be walking into the door, and all that we've seen about him as far as his character and what his teammates are saying about him, and how well he's revered by his coaches and teammates, it says a lot. And obviously, you know, the front office with the Bears is showing that this is their guy. Everything that has happened in the past few couple weeks now, all signs are pointing that way, and they're not even hiding it at this point, really, in my opinion. So to me, this is a really exciting time. There's a lot to like about this kid. And the ones, like I said to you guys before, the one concern I had about him was what kind of football character, what was his love for football? What was his like? What was he like as a leader? What are his teammates thinking of him? And like I said, in the last couple weeks, we're seeing it's all love. It's all good things. It's all positive things. So I mean, I don't know how we couldn't be on board at this point. So what are your thoughts on this stuff, Tim?
So to start my thoughts, I'm actually going to respond to a question on here. Victor asks, if Caleb would have entered the draft last year, would the Bears have traded number one or picked him? I'm going to answer that by saying, no, I think they would have still traded the pick. And here's my reasoning. Everybody talks about the talent. The talent is definitely there. But something I've learned over the last couple of times I've heard Ryan Poles speak, twice in particular, he said the exact same thing. And just like you were talking about, he was talking about the resetting the rookie timeline, right? Which is obviously more important than either one of us thought it was at the time. But my reasoning behind this, everything that he has said about Justin was, yeah, we didn't do much around him my first year there, for sure. We actually imploded the roster, so that wasn't his fault. And then the next year, yeah, we got him a few weapons, but we also started seeing some of the improvement that we've been talking about. So I truly believe that they felt like they could have built around Justin and they could have had success. But from everything that I'm hearing from him, it sounds like we just feel like taking a quarterback at number one and resetting that quarterback clock is the best option for us. Because as the point he makes is the money. So after, 4 years or 3 years when they're able to get an extension, especially if Caleb Williams is phenomenal or even if he's okay, that's going to, acquire a lot of money to go his way. And like Ryan has said, once you get to that point to pay the quarterback, the team has to win because of the quarterback, because now you don't have the money to allocate towards other position players or, all the players on your roster.
He has to elevate the rest of the roster at that
Correct.
Point.
He has to elevate the roster because you won't have the salary. You'll be over the cap is what I'm saying. They don't have the salary. They'll be constrained salary wise to pay other people, other players. So everything he's saying is, look, I love Justin. I didn't want to trade him. My son, as he said, was hurt over it. And he just said, he's still trying to get over it to this day. But
hold on before you continue, Mayhem makes a point that I just want to comment on real quick here. He says that if Caleb Williams isn't better than Justin Fields, Ryan Poles will be fired. I'll say this. It kind of depends. If the team is on an upward trajectory, if we're talking about a team is winning, if we're like San Francisco has been with their up and down quarterback play, now they have Purdy, obviously. But if we were at the point where we were winning, regardless of whether Caleb was performing well or not, I don't think he's getting fired necessarily. But, I mean, he's definitely in hot water at that point because now he's got to find a quarterback and it's going to be much harder to do, which is why he's doing it now, guys. And there's been a lot of arguments from a lot of different sides. Look, like I said, we've been on the support train for Justin too. We wanted him to stick around. But I understand this reasoning here, okay? Justin's not elevating his teammates. I think you can argue that at this point. Not only just that, but again, it's like Caleb is going to have an opportunity to come in here and be better. We haven't had an opportunity to get a guy at number one before. This is a different animal, not somebody like this. Now, last year is a different argument. So to kind of answer the question that was asked before I go back to you, Tim, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I kind of want to answer this real quick. So the point of, do we think he would have traded back for Caleb? If Caleb was in the draft last year, do we think we would have taken him? I think it just kind of still depends because last year you still had to see more from Justin. It wasn't like okay, we've seen enough. We got to move on now. I think he really had to see with some more weapons around him what he could do. And they did put some more pieces around him. And obviously their decision was it wasn't enough. So now we do move on. Now, in a different scenario, if Caleb isn't there at number one, if they don't have the number one pick, do they stick with Justin? Probably. It just all depends. But Aldo makes a point here too that Justin's trade value is probably better last year also. And that's likely also the case. So, I mean, it's possible. If Caleb was in the draft last year, I think it's possible they could have moved on and gone with him just because of the fact that, yeah, there's a lot of other factors there. Justin's trade value would have been better. He's still Caleb Williams. The talent is still there. But here's the difference, though, is what they've built right now is not what they had at the start of the season last year. And it's kind of unfortunate for Justin, but look at the team that they've got built around Caleb right now. So he's in a good situation. I don't think they had that last year. So I just think that the fact that they didn't have that with him last year, I'm not sure that they would have made that decision, but it's a good question. It really is a good question because the talent is absolutely there. Whether they thought that they could still make it work with what they had last year, or if they would have tried to put more around him last year than they did with Justin is an interesting thought. So I'm not sure. It's a good question, though. Go ahead, Tim. I'm sorry.
Hey, our guest is here. I mean, if he can jump in if we want to, Jeff, or you want to go ahead and jump into him and we can start that discussion?
Yeah, we can bring him in now. So, guys, we've had him on before. As you already know, this is Charleston Bowles. He works for Rivals with Notre Dame Football, covers recruiting for him. And, he, like I said, we've had him on the show before. it's good to see you, Charleston. We're going to get in with some questions here about the draft and some Notre Dame recruiting, but how have you been? It's good to see you.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you, Jeff and Tim, for inviting me back on. I've been doing well. Spring practice is in kind of full force up here in South Bend. So I've been able to see the team a couple times, and recruiting is also going pretty strong for the Irish. And then obviously NFL draft season, got to attend Notre Dame's pro day a few weeks ago. So everything is going well on my end.
All right, Charleston, I'm going to throw you to the wolves real quick because we were just talking about this quarterback situation. So really quickly, before we get into all the other stuff, I just wanted to ask you, what are your thoughts on the decision to roll with Caleb Williams and trade Justin Fields?
Of course, of course. I think with having the number one pick for the second consecutive year, I think Chicago made the right move with dealing Fields and sticking with the number one pick, which we all assume will be Caleb Williams. I think Justin Fields is a very good prospect coming out of Ohio State. I really liked him a lot. But just kind of to reset kind of the quarterback, reset the organization, get a quarterback on a rookie contract that's younger than Justin. And I really like Justin, really like his rushing upside, really like his physical tools. But I think Chicago has kind of constructed a team that is good for a rookie quarterback. And I think Caleb Williams is one of the better prospects that we've seen, I guess, since I've been alive. I know Andrew Luck, Trevor Lawrence, Peyton Manning was a little bit before my time, but I think Caleb Williams is definitely in that discussion.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think the word generational gets thrown around a little loosely, but yeah, Caleb is definitely one of the better talents that we've seen in a long time. The way the ball just shoots out of his hand is really something to witness. But that kind of leads me to – I've got a couple of questions for you, but it kind of leads me to the game last year with Notre Dame and USC. And it wasn't exactly Caleb's best performance. I'm not sure if you had a chance to watch that game, but Caleb didn't play very well. As you see on the screen here, he went 23 of 37 for 199 yards, one touchdown and three interceptions. And really most of his passing stats are probably in the second half because they were really coming from behind. Notre Dame really attacked him defensively, like big time. So it was a difficult matchup for Caleb in that game. And I just kind of want to know your thoughts on it, because there's a lot of detractors for Caleb who would say, look at that game and tell me that this is the guy that you want leading your franchise. But there's been a lot of obviously other games where he's shown who he is. But just specifically from that game, what did you see from him that kind of shows, you know, he can still be the guy in light of the darkness, so to speak?
Of course, of course. And then I saw a quick chat. Hey, Cliff, how are you doing today? And then, yeah, I was lucky enough to be in attendance for that Notre Dame USC game back in October. And I was a little bit skeptical of USC's offense and Caleb. I think they barely got out against Arizona that week before. And I think that performance, first of all, is a credit to Notre Dame's defense, especially defensive coordinator Al Golden. I know their game plan was they were really confident in that, and they executed it to a T. And Golden has previous history in the NFL as a linebackers coach. But I think kind of with Caleb, he struggled that game. But I think that's kind of something you want to see out of a prospect. I like prospects, especially at the quarterback position, that kind of face adversity. And USC had plenty of that in the second half of the season. And, you know, Caleb's supporting cast wasn't the best. His wide receiver room wasn't, I guess, as heralded as it was in 2022 with Jordan Addison. And his offensive line was a bit shaky. But I do think that performance did kind of, show me that he's human with the interceptions he threw and kind of just the constant pressure he was under. But I think all in all, I think that's a performance that I can live with, especially with what he's put on tape in the other games, and also just kind of the physical tools he has. I think he can make every throw on the field. And I think that game was just kind of more credit to Notre Dame's defense, who he tore up that year before.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just going to say that. And it was an interesting thought because I can't remember who I heard say this, but somebody had said on Twitter that, interestingly enough, that Notre Dame's defense actually planned for Caleb Williams. They had a plan for him in that game, and that doesn't typically happen where a team will plan for a specific player. So that kind of said something to me, and obviously they had a great plan for him because that pass rush was – I mean, it was something that night. It was fun to be a fan of Notre Dame that night for sure, but watching that game, if you're a Caleb Williams fan, was kind of tough to see, but – I tend to agree with you, though. I mean, he's put enough on tape to where I feel like, as far as his overall talent, that game wasn't really a concern to me. So, yeah, I'm with you on that, which it kind of leads me to one more draft question I have for you before we start to get into, like, these recruits and stuff. Notre Dame, there's a couple Notre Dame prospects, one of which actually has a local top 30, a private visit with the Bears, Cam Hart, cornerback for Notre Dame. And he's a big, long corner. He's very athletic. He's got great ball skills. And that's the kind of thing that the Bears look for in their corners and really their defensive players in general. They love length. They love size. And my question to you is, like, what are your thoughts on Cam? And the reason I say this is because the Bears right now actually have a decent amount. They have a good corner group right now. They really don't need another starting corner. And Cam, I think, is probably going to go somewhere in day two, either round two or round three. And really, the Bears have met with a group of corners in that area that should go in that area. So I feel like they're going to take one somewhere there. So my question to you is someone who's watched Cam Hart in the past like we have, do you think he's the kind of guy who can make a transition to safety? And what are your other kind of thoughts on him as far as a player?
Yes, I'm a big fan of Cam. I actually got to sit down with him before the season and kind of do a feature story on him. He was the team captain for Notre Dame last season as a fifth-year senior. And I do think he might have that positional versatility to maybe move to safety in the NFL. He's coming out of high school in 2019. He was actually a wide receiver that Notre Dame took, and then he eventually switched to cornerback in South Bend. But like Jeff said, his wingspan's very impressive, his length. I think one thing about him, he's a high-character kid, which I think Chicago's front office really values. Mm-hmm. Also, his competitive spirit. I know we went down to the Senior Bowl, and unfortunately, in the game that Saturday, I kind of left early with an injury. But I know in practice all week he was competitive. He would take on wide receivers, and I think kind of his physicality going against wide receivers off the line is a strength. And I do think he can kind of clean up in tackling and kind of his technique when going kind of in run support. But I do think he's a guy that Chicago should look to add in with Tyreek Stevenson and Jalen Johnson.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it seems like I'm actually really happy the direction Notre Dame has gone since Marcus Freeman's been there. I feel like defensive back was always a weakness in Notre Dame for a long, long time. You'd have one or two every once in a while that were really good, but like as a whole and totality, it wasn't very good. Now we're really starting to see a lot of those defensive backs that are really, really good. Next year, I think we're going to have the best corner in the entire NFL draft coming out. So, I want to continue on with some draft questions. Obviously, probably everybody's favorite draft player coming out of Notre Dame this year is Joe Alt. So Charleston, it's very unlikely. I think Joe Alt would fall to 9. There's too many teams that need a tackle, and he's the best tackle in this draft and one of the best tackles, in a long, long time in the draft coming up. So what are some things that, teams are going to get if they get Joe Alt this year?
Yes, of course. I think Joe's a really clean prospect when it comes to the way he plays football and the way he kind of would fit into the locker room and fit along an NFL offensive line. Another guy like Cam Hart, high character kid, is all about the work. I think, you know, we saw when he kind of got thrown into the fire as a freshman at Notre Dame and kind of that progression he made over his Irish career. I think one thing I really like about kind of watching his film and being able to see him up close during practice and during home games last season, he never really gets dominated. And that's always something you like to see with an offensive tackle that you want to take in the top 10, because, you know, some offensive tackles maybe don't pan out when you take them in the top 10 or top 15. And I think Joe, he might not, you know, be an all pro player each and every year, but I think he has a very high floor and can definitely be a Pro Bowl player for whichever kind of NFL franchise decides to draft him. And I do think it's highly unlikely, like you said, Tim, that he makes it to the Bears at 9. But I know they had a strong contingent at Pro Day a couple weeks ago, and I think he would be a fit for them if he falls there. But I think, you know, NFL teams really like what they see in Joe Alt. I think he checks all the boxes.
So I want to ask you really quickly, I don't know if you can answer this or not, but Jeff and I have been arguing about this for the last few days. There's no report that says Joe Alt has actually met with the Bears. So you said they had a large contingent at the Pro Day. Did they in fact meet up with Joe Alt? Do you know?
I do not know that. I know Chicago, the Chicago media had a very strong presence, and they were kind of reporting that the Bears were kind of sniffing around Joe. But I don't know at this time if he's had an individual meeting with them, either at the combine or, you know, at the facility or anything like that. But I do know the Bears had a couple guys there in South Bend for pro day.
Okay. Hey, one last question for me before we get in Jeff, go back to Jeff, but we're definitely talking Notre Dame players going into the draft. So I think this is kind of the thought from everybody that Audric Estime is probably the best running back in this year's draft class. Didn't have the best combine workout, obviously, with the 40 time, but man, he shed that time big time at his pro day, which we all knew he was game fast. You know, that 40 time didn't mean anything to me at the combine. So what, you know, he tends to run a very bruiser style, and that doesn't typically last very long in the NFL. So what is your projection for him? Like, what round area do you see him going, and what team do you think would be a really good fit for him?
Definitely. I think Audric, right now, I would probably say fourth or fifth round is probably where he sits at the moment. Kind of before the combine, I thought he might be a third rounder, might creep into that third round. But I think right now, kind of with the running back value in the NFL, I think he's a fourth or fifth rounder. I'm a really big fan of his game. Got to watch him this season, or last season, I should say. And like you said, a very bruising style type of running. But he's also faster than a lot of teams give him credit for. I know broke off a big run against NC State once they came out the locker room after a weather delay. And I think, you know, one thing about Audric, he got NFL coaching in South Bend. Running backs coach D'Lynn McCullough won a Super Bowl with the Kansas City Chiefs in February 2020. And he's done everything he can to kind of develop Audric and have him ready. And I think he can definitely come into a running back room and I think by committee and be an immediate contributor, especially in short yardage, or he's even developed as a pass catcher. And just a couple fits off the top of my head that I like for Audric, maybe the Philadelphia Eagles. I know they had either scouts or coaches at Pro Day, and I think he would be a very good piece behind Saquon Barkley. I know Philadelphia's kind of tried with Rashad Penny, tried with Kenneth Gainwell, and I think he would bring something to that Philadelphia backfield that's kind of been lacking in recent years.
I like that. I like that fit for him in Philly. I think that sounds good.
Well, I keep hearing everybody say Dallas, and I'm like, please do not go to Dallas.
I think that'd be a good fit.
Even though I would like to see him play with Zach Martin, that'd be pretty cool. But
I think that'd be a good fit for him there, too.
It would be. It would be.
In any case, let's kind of get off the draft stuff and kind of get more into your expertise, Charleston. Because I do have some questions about Notre Dame's recruiting that's coming up here soon, and some of these early enrollees, like Kingston Viliamuasa, and one that I really wanted to ask you about was local Chicago product, local to the area, Cam Williams. And I believe he is a new enrollee, correct? An early enrollee?
Yep.
Yeah, so I wanted to ask about him, wanted to get your thoughts on him and like what he looks like right now. I did see a clip on – yeah, it was him. So I saw a clip on Twitter, and he looked like very crisp in his route running. So I was just kind of very sudden. I was kind of curious to see what you thought about him and some of these other early enrollees that are in practice right now.
Of course. I'll start with Cam. I think when it comes to Cam, I don't think he's ever going to be outclassed as an athlete. And that obviously in college, he has kind of the same level of athletes around him. But I think that's something that will make his transition really good. And the few spring practices I've seen, like you said, Jeff, his route running, I know that's something that he was working on toward the end of his senior season and kind of wanted to be more of a technician coming off the line of scrimmage. I think that's shown improvements in the periods that we've gotten to see. In his hands, he's consistent with catching the ball from the periods that we've seen. So I think Cam could be a contributor right away. I know the wide receiver room is kind of revamped and they have a lot of talented guys fighting for playing time. But I think Cam is a name to watch maybe in the Blue Gold game later this month as a guy who should see playing time in that game and maybe kind of have a similar performance or to what Jaden Greathouse did last spring. And then, like you said, Kingston, he definitely fits in with the linebacker room. I mean, you see him, he looks physically ready to play heavy, meaningful minutes, be a piece of the rotation when it comes to Notre Dame's linebacker room. He really has a high football IQ, I think. And I think when it comes to run support, pass coverage, I think he just soaks all the knowledge in from Marcus Freeman and Coach Golden and linebackers coach Max Bulla. And he was a five-star on Rivals, and I think he can definitely challenge for playing time. And I think he's probably the freshman to watch when it comes to the Blue Gold game, along with Bryce Young, the defensive end and the NFL legacy recruit. He's another name to watch. But I think Bryce Young, Kingston, and Cam Williams, from what I've seen in spring practice, they all look the part, and I think they'll be meaningful contributors at Notre Dame right away.
You think any of them can start right off the bat?
I think Kingston will challenge for a starting position. I think Jalen Snead will lock down one position, Jack Kaiser, and then you kind of have Drake Bowen, Kingston, and Jaden Osbury kind of challenging for that third spot.
Real quick, Charleston, before we ask you, we want to get into a couple more recruiting questions, but Aldo does have one more draft question for you. And this is an interesting one here because Blake Fisher is another tackle that Notre Dame has that hasn't been talked about as much. And he wants to know your thoughts about him. What are his strengths and weaknesses as an offensive lineman?
Yeah, of course. I kind of know Blake from, you know, growing up in Indianapolis. He played at Avon, which is kind of on the west side of Indianapolis. And he was a five-star recruit in Rivals, and Joe Alt kind of took that shine, I guess you could say, in their college careers. But Blake is very athletic. He has a very powerful frame. I think he's very explosive off the line, and I think one of his weaknesses maybe in pass protection, sometimes he can get, I don't want to say lazy, but kind of miss his responsibilities when it comes to that. He got really good experience at right tackle this past season with Joe Alt on the left side. But I think kind of knowing his assignments, having improving his football IQ, knowing, you know, when he gets his hands on somebody to kind of drive him into the dirt and run blocking, those type of things. But I think he has all the tools to maybe come in the NFL, be in the system, maybe sit for 1 to 2 years, maybe get behind a really good veteran that can teach him the ropes. But I think year two, year three, he can be challenging for a starting spot along the offensive line, just because I think he's gifted athletically. And I think in the NFL, there's kind of an offensive tackle need right now with so many kind of quarterback injuries last year and guys not really knowing their responsibilities. But I think Blake Fisher, he's a very intriguing prospect that I'd probably take late second round, early third round.
So I just want to clarify with you, Charleston. I've heard a few different things, so I just want to make sure I'm hearing it right. With Riley Leonard transferring over now, and we talked about this when you were on last time with us, and sure enough, that's the direction that they ended up going. With that addition, and you know, CJ Carr now enrolled, and now Deuce Knight coming up. Are they in any danger of losing any of their other quarterbacks on scholarship?
Yeah, so I think this spring we'll say a lot about that. I know Riley Leonard came in, and Steve Angeli is kind of ready to compete. I know those are the two kind of at the top of the competition, and then Kenny Minchie and CJ Carr kind of having their own competition. But all the quarterbacks look good in spring practice, and I think in this day and age, you probably have to prepare for one of them leaving. And I think if I had to guess right now, it would probably be Angeli if he were to lose the job. But Steve is really liked by his teammates. I know Jaden Thomas, wide receiver, said he's really seen Steve lock in this spring. Had a really good Sun Bowl performance in the bowl season. So I think just in this college football, in this modern era, I think, you know, Coach Freeman, they have to prepare for that. But I do think with quarterback recruiting, I think you just want to keep cycling in, cycling out the best talent there is. And I think Deuce Knight in 2025, and they have their sights on some pretty talented guys in 2026 as well. So I don't think that might be in the coaching staff's kind of the back of their minds, but I think right now it's just about accumulating the most talent at the position and then going from there, because we see, you know, in college football, JJ McCarthy this year, Trevor Lawrence in his years at Clemson, Joe Burrow in his year at LSU. If you have an elite quarterback and he can, you know, he doesn't have to pass for this many touchdowns or pass for this many yards, but if he can kind of have the operation and just kind of run it, I think you can be a national championship contender in the 12-team playoff, or if they extend to 16 teams.
That kind of leads me to one more question I have for you in regards to the recruiting classes that are coming up here, Charleston. So I'm not sure if it's changed or not, but at one time I know Notre Dame's 2025 class was number one in the nation. I'm not sure if they still are or not, but 2026, give us some thoughts on that, what that looks like. And Tim mentioned Deuce Knight, the 2025 quarterback who's committed. And there's another one in 2026 who they're talking to. I believe his name is Brady Hart, and I think he's from Florida. I could be wrong about both of those things, but give us some. I wanted to ask you about him because, as far as I know, they're probably not giving out five stars for anybody right now for that class. But do you anticipate any of these recruits that Notre Dame's in on that class getting up to that five-star rating?
Of course, of course. So Notre Dame's 2026 class obviously kind of got headlines last month when they offered a ton of kids on Pot of Gold Day. Mm-hmm. And then Jordan Faison's younger brother, Dylan, actually became the first to commit later that, I think 24 hours later or maybe less than that. And Dylan is another lacrosse player in Florida who's a wide receiver who's a three-star right now, according to Rivals, but is probably due for a jump up after his next football season. But yeah, Jeff, Notre Dame really likes Brady Hart, quarterback out of Cocoa, Florida. He's very tall, kind of has a thin frame, but he was actually on campus this past week for spring practice. I got to see him in person on Wednesday for the first time, and he was following the quarterbacks around, and Chad Bowden was kind of accompanying him and kind of leading him around practice. So that's a guy they're definitely in for, and I can see, you know, challenging for five-star status. Definitely won the state championship last year in the state of Florida. And just some other schools, real quick about Hart. Expect Florida to, both of his parents attended the University of Florida. So expect Florida, who has offered to be in the mix for Hart. But Notre Dame really likes their chances there early. And then Deuce Knight in the 2025 class, he's a four-star right now, according to Rivals. He could jump up to five-star status, but he got back up to campus earlier this spring for a really important visit because Alabama and Ole Miss are not stopping in recruiting him, and Notre Dame feels good about getting him back on campus. And offensive coordinator and tight ends coach Mike Denbrock is really going to make a difference there with the offense he's bringing over and his kind of development with Desmond Ridder, Jaden Daniels. I think that's really attractive tonight. Then 2026, going back to that, I think it's a little bit too early to know a lot of kids there, but there's a lot of talented kids in Chicago. Defensive tackle Gabriel Hill, defensive end, I believe, Braden Jones, who Notre Dame has offered both of them. And I think Notre Dame kind of they cleaned up in the 2025 class in Chicago with getting three defensive commits who expect to sign in December. And I think they really want to keep attacking that region in 2026 with the defensive talent that is in that region.
Yeah, it's starting to really sound like there's a lot of high school football talent in that Chicagoland area. We've started seeing it over the last few years, and it really is starting to grow. And I think it's really beneficial for Notre Dame and for the Bears because, for one, Notre Dame is considered a local school for the Bears, so they're able to have visits with any of those guys as long as they want, as often as they want. And vice versa with Notre Dame, they're really close to Chicago. Obviously, that's within 2 hours of a drive. Those kids are close to home, and that's kind of seems to be important these days anymore. Kids like being close to home, and it's just the way the world is right now. So that's a really good thing for me. So just to get into it a little bit more, who is your most exciting, or who are you most excited about coming in for this 2025 class? Your personal opinion.
Of course, of course. Let me think here for a second. I'll go with two guys, one on the offensive side of the ball and one on the defensive side of the ball. First on offense, I'll go with Christopher Burgess Jr. Goes to Simeon in Chicago. He's a defensive end who I got to see for the first time last year in a camp setting in Cincinnati, and has all the physical tools, has the traits, has the competitive spirit that, you know, Notre Dame is attracted to. And it was a big win when they got him in January over the likes of Ohio State, Michigan. And he's a guy that defensive line coach Al Washington is really excited about. And I think he has positional versatility. He's a defensive end right now in high school. He can slide inside in college. He can play kind of both ends. And he was a little hampered due to injury as a junior. But I think what he put on tape and just the powerful kind of skill he has in rushing the passer and using his hands and a really good footwork for his age. And he's a young guy too, I believe 16 or 17. So all his development is ahead of him. And then offensively, not going to pick Deuce Knight just because I think that's the obvious answer. I don't think Notre Dame has really signed a quarterback like him before. Probably going to go with tight end James Flanagan. His father, Jim, played at Notre Dame. I think he's kind of underrated, might be because he's in the Wisconsin area. And, you know, not a lot of skill position guys that come out of there a lot. A lot of offensive linemen, defensive linemen, tight ends. But I think James is a all-around tight end that can kind of do everything. And Notre Dame's really serious about recruiting their tight ends. And I think they only expect to take one in the 2025 cycle. And I think getting him on campus after Jack Larson and after what we saw of Cooper Flanagan last year, I think that that tight end U, kind of that legacy that they're building, is just going to continue with James, who was also a really good hockey player and just really strong for that tight end position as a pass catcher and as a run blocker.
I would say that's probably a pretty good prediction on your part, because Notre Dame doesn't usually miss on tight ends. I mean, how many have we seen that go into the NFL in the last several years? I mean, there's probably five, six, seven, maybe more than that. All contributors. Cole Kmet's a big one for the Bears right now. Just got a big contract. So, anyways, we really do appreciate you, Charles. We won't keep you any longer. I know you told us you give us 20 minutes. So we really do appreciate you being on. Again, guys, give Charleston a follow. He covers Notre Dame for Rivals. He has good stuff, really good writing, really good reports out there about Notre Dame and the team and what's going on with the recruiting. He's at CBowl01. Like I said, he's our first guest we've had on twice. So we do appreciate you coming on again, Charleston, and hopefully you'd like to come on again in the future for us.
Of course. It was a great opportunity to come on again and chop it up with you guys. I know this month is really exciting for Bears fans and for all NFL fans, and I'm really excited to keep tabs on your guys' work and keep following.
Hey, really quick before we let you go, Charleston, I don't know if you have your own team specifically, but do you have your own NFL team?
Yes. I'm an Indianapolis Colts fan. So
I knew it was coming.
What do you think about Richardson before you go? I just real quick. Are you pretty excited about him? You think he's the next big thing? He looked pretty good last year before he went down.
Yes, he definitely showed some great signs. I think of the Los Angeles Rams game. I remember a certain play where Aaron Donald was kind of in his face and he got a long pass, I think, to Alec Pierce. But I'm really excited about Richardson. But I'm a really big fan of Shane Steichen, so I think Richardson, we can kind of help him. He's going to take his lumps because he didn't get in a full rookie season. But I think Shane Steichen is the real deal, and I'm confident in Steichen and a lot of our playmakers. And I would love to see us go with another playmaker at 15, but really just excited about the Colts and that future. And I always like kind of a young team to root for. So really excited about the Colts moving forward.
Yeah, interestingly enough, Colts GM Chris Ballard was a longtime Chicago Bears executive when they brought in a lot of good talent like Brian Urlacher, Lance Briggs, Devin Hester. He was there for all that. So he's obviously a great executive, and I think the Colts are obviously in good hands with him. So, again, we appreciate you having you on, Charleston, as always, and hopefully we'll have you on again in the future. But thanks again.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Tim.
See you, Charleston. That was really good. That was really good, insightful conversation. I was just going to say, like, I know his expertise is with, you know, Notre Dame and recruiting, but man, he knew his Bears stuff too. Like, and, you know, talking about how they value character and all these things, like he clearly has really brushed up on the Bears, or maybe he's just that knowledgeable of the NFL, but that was really good stuff. And I love the conversation there. Good.
He's in
good.
Tune.
What's that?
He's in tune. He's in tune. It's definitely tune. Great stuff, yeah. You know, and the fact that I like having him on because of the fact, I mean, I knew he wasn't a Bears fan coming in, but just the fact that we get that outside perspective and we can see, yeah. You know, somebody else's opinion, as he mentioned when he first came on, he thought it was the right thing for the Bears to move on and go with Caleb, knowing what we've seen. And he saw the Notre Dame game up close and personal. He was there. He saw the failures that Caleb had in that game. But like I said, there were some things in that game that he put on tape that were even, you know, you can see, okay, now I can see what the deal is here. But, you know, all that being said, it was a great interview and lots of stuff there to like, especially with a lot of the prospects that are coming in Notre Dame, a lot of Chicago kids. And some of these guys that are coming out like Cam Hart, I really think the Bears are going to be seriously considering him if he's there on the board in round 3, depending on where they're at. If they move down, he may or may not be there. But it kind of brings me up to a point later on. I did a mock draft last night that we'll show you guys later, but I did take Cam Hart in that draft, and I got him a little later than he'll probably go. But we will talk about that some.
Before you do that, I want to comment. And did you guys see those amazing graphics on screen for Cam Hart and for Joe Alt? Give Aldo a hand. That was awesome. Like, really, really good stuff there. I mean, this is beautiful here. Like, well done, and gives you guys a good – it was an easy way. You could easily see it. It popped out. You knew exactly what the numbers and what the stats were. That was really good stuff, and that was Aldo all on his own. We appreciate that, Aldo. But, you know, speaking of that, I want to go into Cam Hart really quick since you mentioned that because of those stats. Aldo, if you can you pull up that Cam Hart one again? Just looking at the numbers on here.
Good weed.
Cam Hart is 6'3", 202, 33-inch arms, hand size is 9 3/8 inches, and a 4'4", 540. Guys, if you know anything about those numbers, those are all, like, big-time numbers as far as, like, physical traits. Those are the kinds of things that the Bears salivate over. If we've seen anything from this organization, numbers like that are what 33-inch arms for a corner at 6'3", 202 pounds. He's a solid frame, 4.45. That's a pretty fast 40 time, especially for a defensive back. Like, and Jeff and I were talking about this the other day, but I really think this is a possibility for a future safety. Because I don't think he's great in coverage, especially in man coverage. But, you know, as a safety, he doesn't have to do that very often. And I feel like he'd be a really, really good transition to safety. And I think Jeff talked about that earlier as well. So I didn't mean to cut you off, Jeff, and talking about that, but that was something I wanted to point out. Like, those physical traits are incredibly impressive. And those are the things, if we know anything about Ryan Poles and this staff, they covet traits like that.
Yes, they definitely do. And I mentioned it with Charleston, if he thought he could make that transition to safety. And I mean, I definitely see the possibility there. We all know Flus has mentioned in the past that he loves corners. We know he loves corners. So maybe it's always good to have the depth too, because we know guys go down. Terrell Smith had to play plenty last year. But I mean, I really feel like if you're going to take a corner on day two with, you know, the team has still got some other pressing needs, in my opinion. I mean, you're not going to get them all filled by that point in time. I just feel like if you're going to go corner there, you're not taking a guy there to be like a backup developmental piece. You're bringing him in to be a developmental piece you think can start at some point. That's why I think if you're going to take a guy like Cam Hart, maybe you think he can play safety. And I mentioned to you guys, there's several other corners that the Bears have had top 30 visits with that are in that range, that could go in that range. I'll give you some names in a little bit, but if you check out, there's a couple ways you can find who the Bears have met with in these top 30 visits. Walter Football has a list. And also, if you guys follow Aaron Lemming from Windy City Gridiron, he's got his own list on there that's really good, and it's got all the top 30 visits that he updates as he sees them coming in. So, like I said, there's three or four, maybe even five corners in that general vicinity in like that third round range that the Bears have met with. And that tells me, as I said to Charleston earlier, that I feel like the Bears are kind of targeting going corner in that area. And if that's the case, I could see Cam Hart being the choice there, because he's a guy that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, that's, again, like I said before, if you're targeting a corner in that area, knowing it's not a huge need, I really feel like there's a true possibility you're talking about a developmental safety here. So I haven't really looked a lot into those other guys that they're meeting with, those corners I just talked to you guys about, but I do want to look more into that, because I want to see their measurables and see some of their tape and maybe decide if these other guys have that kind of versatility too, because then it would make a whole lot more sense if all these guys have that kind of versatility. So that's just my thought on that. And there was a comment in here that I was laughing about earlier that let me see if I can find it. It was kind of funny. Somebody said something about people in Southern Indiana and having, so here it is right here. It's amazing how some people from Indiana have Southern accents. Let me tell you, McFack, your boy to your left over here. He's got a little bit of a Southern accent himself.
I definitely do not have a Southern accent.
Yeah, it is. It's funny. We make fun of him in the family because he comes home sometimes and we've all got those, you know, we've obviously all from Northern Indiana. We've got the Great Lakes accent, the Chicago-ish accent. And Tim comes home and he every once in a while, we use these words with this little Southern drawl to him. We make fun of him for it. So, but I agree. You're totally right. People in Southern Indiana, they really do get these Southern accents. It's a little too close to Tennessee, I think.
Although I can tell you, like, being living in Southern Indiana area, I feel like a lot of these people do it intentionally. It's not a real accent. True. They just try to sound like the real hick whack, but so I can say that I live here. Yeah.
Anyway, so to get back on topic, I thought that was kind of funny, but well, like we were saying, you know, there's these top 30 visits. I kind of want to get into this a little more because the last couple of years, I've been keeping track just on my own. I look at reports on Twitter or wherever else, and I write it down in my phone whenever I see that the Bears have reportedly met with someone, whether it be at the Combine or the Shrine Bowl or a pro day or a top 30 visit or a local visit or what have you. And I try to mark it down and be as specific as I can so that I can remember it. So last year's list that I had, there were five players that the Bears met with. I believe it was five that they met with that had a top 30 visit with that they drafted. And Zach Pickens they met with at the Combine. So of all the guys that they met with that they had top 30 visits, Darnell Wright, Tyreek Stevenson, Jerron Dexter, all those guys were top 30 visits. Seventh round pick Travis Bell was a top 30 visit. And there was one more. I can't remember who it was now, but my point is there's a reason to pay attention to this, guys. The Bears have a tendency to draft guys that they have met with, and there's a reason they're meeting with them. They want to get to know them as a person. We've discussed this at length over the past several months and episodes. So it's important to understand that when we look at these lists and these guys that they've met with, they are probably going to draft players from those lists. And I'm not going to say exclusively, because I'm sure they may draft a player or two who they didn't meet with, but I doubt it's going to be too many of them. They have an idea of who's going to be available and where. And that's why you see them meeting with certain guys in certain areas. So let me give you guys an example. So in the Roshan was the other top 30. Thank you, Vizo. That was another guy who they met with in the top 30, I'm pretty sure. So in any case, to give you guys an example of this, as what I was talking about earlier. So in the top 10 prospects in this draft, we have like Caleb Williams, Roma Dunze, Malik Nabers, Dallas Turner. I believe those are the only four of the top 10 prospects that we can really think of that are probably going to go in the top 10 that the Bears have met with in a top 30 visit. So that tells me right there, if they're going to take a player at number 9, it's going to be one of Nabers, Odunze, or Turner, if they're there. If they're not there, that tells me they may very well move down from that spot, because the other players that they've met with that could be first round players are not guys who are going to be drafted that early. Graham Barton is one of those players from Duke. I feel like he's a first round prospect. He's an interior offensive lineman. He's projected to play center because he did play center for a little bit at Duke early on. And he's not, doesn't really have the length to play, you know, tackle in the league. So this guy is a phenomenal athlete. He's a great fit for the Bears. They've met with him. He's a guy who could potentially go at the end of round one. Zach Frazier is another guy like that. He's a center that the Bears have met with, could potentially go late round one, early round two. So my point here is, guys, is you got to pay attention to the guys that they're meeting with. And you also have to pay attention to where these guys should and could go. Now, obviously that's not a perfect science, but the reason I say that is because if the Bears decide to do some moving around, they've got these guys in these general clusters that they've targeted to meet with, and they will likely draft some of those people, is my whole point here. So pay attention to who they're meeting with, because there's a good chance they're going to draft these guys. These are the guys they're going to be going after. So we'll get into a little bit more of that list later. Maybe we can show you some of that list later. But like I said, you can find them on Walter Football, and Aaron Lemming from Windy City Gridiron also has a list on Twitter you can find. Excellent list, and they'll help you to get a good idea of these guys and who all they have met with. So any thoughts you had on that, Tim, before I kind of get into some more stuff on that?
Yeah, really quickly, I've seen a few comments here in the chat about that number 9 pick. And I look at it one way. I think that I think ultimately their goal would be to trade down there. But I think there's four players in this draft that if they are there, that is who they will take no matter what. If one of these players is there, and those players are one, Joe Alt, Marvin Harrison, Dallas Turner, or Rome Odunze.
They have met with Neighbors too.
I agree, but I don't think Neighbors would be part of it. I think if Neighbors is there, they would trade down.
Well, here's my argument.
They don't need a Neighbors. He's too much like DJ Moore. And if you have too many DJ Moores, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I think that's too many of that same position, and it would be hard to feed all of those mouths. Whereas with Odunze being an X or Marvin Harrison being an X, that's a different route tree.
Well, I don't think feeding the mouths is the argument there. I think it's a matter of fit is what you're trying to argue. But in either case, no matter which receiver you draft, you're going to have more mouths to feed. So but here's the thing is the fact that the Bears have met with both of those guys tells me that they're looking at them like, okay, these are guys that are so good that if they are there, we really have to consider taking them because they're that good. Malik Neighbors, I agree with you. As much as he's not exactly as much of a fit as Odunze would be, in my opinion, because of the fact that he is an X, I just think that Neighbors is such a good player that if he's there, I mean, you almost have to take him because number one, Keenan Allen has not been extended yet. You don't know if they're planning on extending him. And even if they do, you still have, I mean, that's still a really, really good player. Who's another versatile player and you have a ton of weapons there now. So, and again, in my opinion, I don't know if I told you guys this before, but I've mentioned this before to Tim in the past. I really don't think both of those receivers are going to be there at 9, maybe one. But like I said to you guys before, they haven't even met with Joe Alt. So that, at least reportedly, they may have met with him, but we haven't seen it in a report. But the ones that have reportedly have been met with in that area are Dallas Turner, Rome Odunze, Malik Neighbors, and obviously Caleb Williams. So I would think that it's if Turner falls to 9 for whatever reason, I've been telling you guys this forever. I think that's a slam dunk, and I think that's a no-brainer. You go Dallas Turner 100% for sure if he's there at 9. I have serious skepticism that he's going to fall to 9 because he's, in my opinion, the best defensive prospect in this draft. And I have a hard time believing that the top edges and the top tackles are going to be around at pick number 9. I just don't see that being the case. So Brian thinks that he could see Poles trading. I think that's a possibility too. But like I said just now, due to the guys that they've actually met with at the top of that draft, Odunze's, the Neighbors, the Dallas Turners, there's a good possibility that one of those guys is there at 9. Because let's think about who else is in this draft, okay? Joe Alt. I mean, how often do teams pass on the top tackles and the top defensive linemen in the draft for skill players? It doesn't happen very often. You're talking about three receivers who could possibly go in the top 10. That does not happen very often. And if it does happen, you're talking about a lot of really good players sliding down. And if it happens to be the best edge rusher in the draft, how do you pass on that? But here's where I go back to the other part of that, though. Let's say that doesn't happen. Let's say the other teams in the early part of the draft, they start uploading on the trench play. They're going after the tackles. I'm trying to not get off tangent here, but here's a surprise pick that I think could happen here that a lot of people aren't looking at. For one, J.C. Latham is a very underrated prospect, in my opinion. And number two, a team like the Chargers, who they have Jim Harbaugh there, who is known to he's going to want to run the football. They have a good left tackle in place already in Rashawn Slater. I think they could obviously use an upgrade at right tackle. Who is the best right tackle in this draft? It's J.C. Latham. And there's people who will tell you he's the best tackle in the draft, period. I don't know that I agree with that, but it's a matter of preference. And this guy could be so good that I could very easily see him going in the top 10. And you could see two tackles go in the top 10, maybe Joe Alt and J.C. Latham. Maybe Olu makes his way into the top 10. I would tend to doubt it. Maybe Fuaga makes his way into the top 10. But I've also seen reports that guy could play guard, that people could see him as a guard potentially because of his arm length. But my whole point here is that I was trying to get to is that trench players could very easily go in the top 8 picks here. And now maybe one of those top wide receivers is there sitting for the Bears waiting around at 9, Odunze or Neighbors or whatever. Do they take one of those guys or do they move down and get more, because there are receivers in this class. It's a deep class. They're not as good as those guys. But like Brian says, there's so many scenarios. There are so many scenarios here that it's hard to fathom what's actually going to happen. And I can't wait to see it, because it's all going to depend on what these other teams decide they want to do. Maybe some of these other teams in the later round of the draft decide they want to jump up and get that receiver that they're missing because they've got the other pieces and they don't think they're going to have a chance at a guy like this later on. Or maybe there's a team later on in the draft that needs a tackle and they're like, man, we're not going to get that tackle later on. We got to go get him now. So, or edge, same thing. It's a weak class. Man, we got to go up and get our edge right now. We're not going to. So it's interesting to see what's going to happen here. And in my opinion, like I said, if one of those three players is there that they've met with in the top three, that's a top 10 prospect, Neighbors, Adunze, or Turner, I think they go with one of those guys. If not, I think they move down and accrue more picks and they take one of those other guys in that meeting list they've had in the first round. Because if, like I said, pay attention to some of those other top 30 guys, they're more like third, fourth round prospects. So go ahead, Tim.
So there's a couple things I want to rebuttal with in there. The first one would be those receivers at number nine. So assuming one of those receivers falls to nine, everybody keeps saying that, you know, this is a really deep wide receiver draft, and it 100% is, but I look at this in a couple of different ways. Number one, obviously, like Jeff was just saying, those three top receivers are, the gap is like, these guys are up here and the gap is way, way, way down here, separating those guys out. And in any other draft, Adunze or Neighbors would be the number one receiver in that draft, most likely, or mix it. You know what I mean? Any of those three guys would probably be the number one drafted wide receiver. So to me, you're talking, and when you draft one of those guys, for instance, Rome Adunze, he can do everything. He's a 6'3" receiver. He's fast. He runs excellent routes. The yak is very impressive. He goes up and gets the 50-50 balls, which they call 50-50, but they're probably more like 70 or 85 to 15 his favor. Guys like that, that can do everything, that's hard to find. And the upside is massive.
Before you go on, hold your thought, because I want to mention something real quick here. There is a comment that Eberflus made in that press conference a couple weeks ago. I don't know if you guys caught it, but he specifically said with the number nine pick, they're going to be targeting a player who can either help the quarterback or affect the quarterback. Yes. And that tells me you can look at helping the quarterback one of two ways. You can think of it directly like a receiver, or you can think of it indirectly like somebody who's protecting him. Yep. But I think just judging by the guys that they've met with, I think they're talking about help, like direct help, like a receiver, which is again, why I'm telling you guys, I think it's one of those three guys if they're there. And if not, I think it's a move down. But go ahead, Tim.
No, and that's what I was going to continue to say. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, those guys are so talented, their strengths are everything. It's not just like, so here's the thing. If you were to wait in this draft and look for an X, or if you look for a Z or a slot, whatever, if you look for a player of that later in the draft, you're going to get a guy that has those traits that fit for your team or for what you're looking for. Neighbors, Adunze, Marvin Harrison, these guys have all of those traits and they're very hard to find. That's why you take guys like that in the first round. And that's why I think if one of those guys are there, you go that route. This is a really, really good wide receiver draft, especially at the top of the draft. These guys are really good. Any of those three guys could be and might be Hall of Fame.
It's definitely the best trio I've ever seen in my lifetime at the top of the draft. I've seen some 100%. Good duos like Julio Jones, AJ Green, stuff like that. But I've never seen a trio like this at the top. I mean, it's something.
Right. To the point where you could, any of those guys could be the, like, there's everybody. There's so many different opinions. I think most people say Marvin Harrison's the top one, but people like Neighbors more. There's people like Adunze more. It's so wide open and they're so balanced. So in that aspect, I think that's why you would take a receiver there if one of those guys is there. I think that it's going to happen. And there's I'm going to switch off a little bit. There was a comment in here talking about Dallas Turner, and Jeff is the one that's really, really high on Dallas Turner. I do like him, but he's not even my top pass rusher, in my opinion. But there was a comment that said that they believe he's a 3-4 linebacker. And I want to make a point of that really quickly. So if you are a 3-4 linebacker in college that is projected to go into the NFL as an edge, obviously, if you're going into a 4-3 scheme, I don't think it's a big deal at all. Whereas let me finish what I was going to say. If you're a 4-3 defensive end and you're trying to transition into a 3-4 outside linebacker, that's a much more difficult position to transition into, because a 3-4 defense a lot of times requires its linebackers to play in coverage. Whereas in a 4-3, it's not really required for an outside edge to be in coverage very often, if at all. A lot of those guys are just, they're rearing back and rushing the passer. So my point was that I'm not saying it's not a difficult transition, but it's an easier transition from a 3-4 outside linebacker to a 4-3 edge. That's what
I would agree that the transition is probably, it depends on how you look. I don't know if it's easier. It's different. The transition is different. So let's say, for Brian's point. Okay. So Brian says he's probably more of a 3-4 fit. I think he certainly could play as a 3-4 edge. Yes. Because he can do those things. Alabama did it times, ask him to drop back into coverage, and he did it, and he's willing to do it. There was an interview Brian Baldinger did with, I believe it was with Dan Wiederer, where he was talking about Dallas Turner, and he thinks that he can do whatever. It doesn't matter. The guy, he could play in a 4-3. He could play in a 3-4. Because the fact of the matter, he's a good pass rusher, number one. And he's an incredible athlete. So that's why people think he can play in coverage in a 3-4 scheme, because he could, because of his athleticism. But if you think a guy like this couldn't play in a 4-3 and be a dominant pass rusher, and, you know, the thing is, though, is what we're talking about is a guy who can set the edge, a guy who's big enough in a 4-3, stout enough to stop the run. And Dallas Turner has shown he can be a good run stopper. I would like to see him put on some more weight and become a little bit more stout. But if there is no doubt in my mind that this guy could do it. He could be the guy. There's no doubt in my mind at all. I mean, I think he would walk in, and Eberflus would love this guy right off the bat. And the reason that I think it's so important to talk about Dallas Turner here in this case is because, number one, I don't think he's going to fall to 9, number one. But if he did, the reason I think it's such a slam dunk is because, guys, edge rushers, you don't get a chance to draft top edge rushers unless you're in the top 10. It does not happen. I don't expect the Bears to be in the top 10 anymore after this. When do you think they're going to get another bookend edge rusher to pair with Montez Sweat? It's not going to happen. What are they going to do when Montez Sweat's contract's up? They've got to find a way to get a guy at some point. They've got to pair him with somebody, especially if you think you have Jervon Dexter. If you feel like he's a piece that can be your 3 tech, if you feel like he can become that guy, you have to get an edge at some point. And where are you going to get one? It's going to have to happen in the first round, probably in the top 10. So that's why I say if Turner is there, it's obvious to me. But if he's not, James mentions Chop. Chop is a guy that they have met with, reportedly, that they're having a top 30 with. So I think he's more of a later first round. Maybe James thinks he's a second round guy. He's probably first round prospect, but I think he's later first round. So again, that's another guy. If the Bears were to go after a guy like that, it's later in the first round. I think they're going for a move down if they take a guy like Chop. So again, I said it like 3 times already now, but this is, in my opinion, judging who they've met with so far, it's going to be one of those 3 guys if they're there: Neighbors, Odunze, or Turner. If they're not there, it's a move down for some of the other guys that they've met with and that are projected first round talents later on. So I
just wanted to say really quickly.
Hurry up, Tim. I want to get to something.
Okay, really quickly. I think what everybody doesn't, or not everybody, what a lot of people don't understand or don't see, the NFL is very specific in how it drafts. What do you see the most of every year in the first round? It's trenches, offensive line, defensive line, and corner. Those are the 3 positions that go the most in the first round, for good reason, because that's how you typically build a championship caliber football team. So for anybody that thinks that Dallas Turner, or if anybody thinks that within the first 9 picks, there's not going to be a defensive player taken off or an edge rusher, they're crazy. somebody is going to take an edge rusher in there, or somebody's going to trade up for an edge rusher. It's going to happen. And the reason I would agree with Jeff about Dallas Turner is because he is the one that has the most upside and physical traits, right, along with production of any of them. Whereas obviously the one with the most production, Leiatu Leitu, to me is the better prospect, in my opinion, over, I know Jeff likes Turner, but I like Leitu. The difference is Leitu doesn't have the upside, and typically teams are going to draft more on the upside. What was it, 2 years ago? Number one overall pick, or was it number one? Trayvon Walker and Aiden Hutchinson was the very next pick. Who's having the better career right now? You know, obviously, but at the same time, that's typically what teams do. It was the obvious pick to go with Aiden Hutchinson, in my opinion, that year, but because of the upside, they wanted to go with Trayvon Walker. I'm not saying that Dallas Turner is Trayvon Walker and Leitu is Aiden Hutchinson, although I have made the comparison on this show before that I think Aiden Hutchinson is, or excuse me, that Leitu is similar to Aiden Hutchinson. But the point being, you don't know, but teams typically do go with the guys that have the most upside, especially for edge rushers. They love the athletic freaks. That's what they look for. And I do think that Dallas Turner is probably going to be the first edge rusher taken in the draft because of that. Go ahead, Jeff. I'm sorry to cut you off.
There was a good point in here I wanted to bring up. So there's a couple points, actually. So first of all, Cliff says that the Bears don't always take guys that they've had 30 visits with. And you're right, I did mention that earlier. But the one point I want to make to that is you're talking about a guy in the top 10 right here, okay? In my opinion, they're not taking a guy in the top 10 that they haven't met with, okay? Look what they did with Darnell Wright last year. They put him through a grueling one-on-one intense workout to make sure that he was the guy. If you think that it's not important to them to meet with the guy that they take in the top 10 to make sure he is their dude, I don't know that I agree with that. I don't think.
And I think he was the dude from that time on. That was the guy they were drafting, period.
He was. So, and like I said, in my opinion, I feel like whoever it is that they're taking at that point, yeah, Vizo thinks Atlanta's running the podium for Turner, and they very well could. I think they should. But knowing Atlanta, it wouldn't surprise me if they did something different. It really wouldn't. Maybe they trade down. So I just think that, like I said, in my opinion, if a guy like that is there, you can't pass on it. And I'm with Brian. I can't wait for the draft because I cannot wait to see what happens in these top eight picks to see what the Bears could possibly do, see who's there. So that's the one thing I wanted to get to. We don't have a ton of time left, so I wanted to put these graphics on the screen if Aldo still has them. I did a mock draft last night real quick that I wanted to show you guys to just kind of give you an idea of what I think could possibly happen. Now, my mock here is based mostly on guys that the Bears have actually met with, okay, either in a top 30 visit or at the combine or in some other form or fashion. Every single one of these picks is a guy that they have met with somewhere. And I think Mason McCormick is the only one that's not a top 30 visit. So of these draft picks, Caleb Williams, number one, he was the obvious one. I got Dallas Turner at number nine. He actually fell to me. Believe it or not, there were some trades that happened. Some other guys went before him. A team traded up to take Olu Fasano, number five, I believe, which was a big surprise to me. But sometimes it's how these mocks shake out. So Turner was there, and I took him without hesitation. I believe both the other receivers were gone. Both Odunze and Neighbors were gone at that time. So Turner was the obvious choice for me. I didn't move down. So then I got into the third round, and I had multiple offers to move down. So I took them. I think I moved down two or three times before I got to Dylan Laub, who's a guy they've met with twice now. They met him at the combine, and they've met him again in a top 30 visit. He's a running back from New Hampshire. Tons of upside, great athlete, and I think he's the type of guy that they could very seriously target. I'm just not sure exactly where they would find him at because he's kind of all over the place in these mock drafts. Some people see him as a second-round guy, which is I would be surprised by that because he's a running back. Others have him in like the fourth, fifth round. I think the Bears could very well see him as like a third round guy and take him there. They have obvious interest in him. So I took him at 93. I mentioned you guys earlier, I took Cam Hart. He followed me at 122. This is the pick the Bears got from the Eagles last year in that trade down from number 9 to 10. I'm not sure Cam Hart makes it to 122, but the Bears obviously like him. They've met with him. So I did take him at 122 because he was one of those corners they've met with and he was still available at that point. So I took him. I had another pick right after that from a trade down and as another guy the Bears have met with. I didn't get a chance to address center earlier or offensive line play. So I took an interior lineman in Mason McCormick. This guy's a phenomenal athlete. He was really good. I believe it was the Senior Bowl. It was either the Senior Bowl or the Shrine Bowl. He put on a show there. He's very, very, very good there. He looked really good. He was pretty dominant, very athletic. So I liked what I saw from him. He's a guy that the Bears could take there. And then with my last pick, it was another fourth round pick. I ended up with three of them. It was Garrett Greenfield. He's a tackle from South Dakota State. I believe he projects as an interior lineman also, but he's another guy that the Bears have met with. They have a lot of, they like him a lot. I could be wrong about that interior alignment part. I think he might be a guy with traits. I have to go back and look at that. But he's a guy that the Bears have met with and like. So I could see him being a pick there. The one thing that you guys can see that I didn't get was a wide receiver. I wanted to take one. Obviously, I didn't get one of the ones I liked early on. Jaquan Jackson is the guy that the Bears have met with. He's a later round prospect. He wasn't there when I had a chance to draft at these other spots, so I didn't take him. But I did take other need spots, and I felt like I was taking best player available in most of these places. So I'm not sure if this is what the Bears draft would actually look like, but I think I could get on board with it as if this is what they did. So I'm not sure what you guys think, but give us your thoughts if you like it or not. But this is what I ended up with last night. And by the way, the mock draft simulator I was using was, I believe it's called Pro Football Network.
Yes.
And there's also a cumulative draft board that I use, if you guys are interested in looking up, that I can probably post on this video later on or something. But it's a cumulative big board that I use that shows a bunch of other draft boards that they've combined, and they give you a good idea of like where guys they expect to go. And it's actually pretty accurate.
Yeah. So I just looking at yours, I'll tell you guys really quickly, I did the same mock draft on the same simulator. I used Pro Football Network as well. And just to give you guys some context, I probably ran a first round simulation, I want to say 15 times probably, just to see the different scenarios. And almost every single time it came to nine the same exact way. I shouldn't say the same way. The same player fell to nine every time. So Aldo is working on putting these together right now, but while he does that, I'll discuss Jeff's draft a little bit. So we did have one player that we both drafted, or two, I should say, obviously because of Caleb Williams. But yeah, I mean, I like Jeff's draft. I will say, I'm sure you didn't like that you didn't have a wide receiver fall there. Here we go right here. Aldo's got it. So my draft, I'll start with number one, obviously, Caleb Williams. And like I said, when I got to nine, it was the same thing almost every single time. Probably all but maybe two or three times, Rome Odunze was the one that fell to nine. And every time, Dallas Turner was gone. Neighbors was gone. Obviously, Joe Alt was gone. So Rome fell there almost every time, that's the guy I like anyway the most. So this was great for me. But I think it'd be perfect for the Bears too, obviously, because he fits that X receiver role. And then since he was at nine, I went ahead and took him. I wasn't able to trade down, but I was able to trade back in to the second round. Once I saw Zach Frazier was still there in the second round, I used a future second round pick for next year and packaged it with another pick. I can't remember exactly what pick I used, but I packaged two picks and I was able to trade up into the second round. And I drafted Zach Frazier, who I believe would certainly be a long-term fix at center. Jeff and I have both talked about how much we like Zach Frazier. He is a top 30 visit for the Bears. And I do think that would be a possibility for sure. They could take a center, because I don't think that they have obviously their permanent fix at center there. And I just think JPJ is out of the question unless you get later in the first round. So Zach Frazier to me would be great. And then at 75, I took a three technique who can also play the zero and the five. He's kind of all over the place on the line. A great rotational piece there. So I got Braden Fisk from Florida State. has great traits, a lot of things that the Bears look for as well. I believe they have met with him as well. You'd have to fact check me there, Jeff. I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure he has.
Say that one more time.
What's that?
He said, repeat that one more time. I'm sorry. I was reading a comment.
Was Braden Fisk. He has met with the Bears, correct?
I don't believe he has. No, okay. He might've at the combine or something, but not in the top 30. No,
no, I wasn't sure if it was top 30 or not, but in any case, I've got him there. And then ironically, Jeff and I both have Cam Hart at 122. That's kind of funny how that worked. We did not discuss this, by the way. It just kind of fell that way. But for the same reasoning, probably that Jeff has him here, I believe, and they've obviously met with him. They like him. And like I was talking about earlier, the traits just stand out, especially for his position. And they love traits like that. And to get him in the fourth round would be a big, big move here. Getting him in the fourth round would be good. And I do believe he can play safety. So I've got Cam Hart there as well. And then I was able to trade back in a couple of picks later when I saw Brendan Rice was still there. And yes, I did take another receiver. I know that's probably unpopular, especially that I had to trade future capital to get there. But I liked that move. And I think that, in a couple of years, we're not going to have Keenan Allen still. Brendan Rice is another one that can play an X role, but he's also an excellent route runner. So he could definitely fit in there as well in the slot and take Keenan Allen's spot. He's the son of Jerry Rice. We've talked about this before. I don't think it's too rich to take him there in the fourth round. Certainly it wouldn't be. That would actually be a steal, in my opinion, to get him there. So that's where I was at. And I think, honestly, if I know I had to, like I said, I had to trade future capital to get those two picks, but I didn't have to give up a whole lot. And I think it would be reasonable. It's not like it was an unrealistic trade, if I remember right when I did it. So let me know what you guys think in comparison. Vote if you can in the comments here, which of our drafts would you prefer if you were in charge of the Bears draft decision, or which one do you like better for your Bears right now? Like I said, Jeff, I liked what you did as well. And it's kind of funny how it fell differently to both of us. Like I said, Adunze was the one that was there typically for me. Hey, there's a cool comment here. Scooby Palooza says Braden Fisk is from Michigan City, Indiana. That's awesome. Jeff and I actually spent a lot of time at Michigan City when we were kids. We went to
Beach.
From Silver Beach, Washington. We went to all of
those. Not Silver Beach. There. Silver What's Beach that? Is in Michigan. You got the wrong beach.
It's in Michigan City as well.
No, Silver Beach is in Michigan. You got the wrong beach. It doesn't matter.
It's all, right. case, it's all Michigan City area. It's literally like that's all Michigan City to me. But anyway, go ahead.
Anyway, so I thought it was kind of interesting. So the one thing Tim mentioned was that he traded future capital. I didn't trade any future capital. I didn't acquire any future capital either. I just traded down and acquired some more picks in the fourth round and moved down to the third round. So that's kind of what we ended up with. We eventually want to do a mock draft with you guys in a couple of weeks. I think we're going to do one interactive with you guys on screen before the draft happens. That's kind of in the works. We'll talk about it more. But that's the hope. That's the goal. So James thinks Lob was a little early, and I could see that argument. But like I said, there are plenty of people. He's kind of sporadic the way people view him. Some people see him as like a second round guy or a fourth or fifth round guy. He's kind of all over the place. So I just took him where he was available, and the board that I was looking at had him in that general area. So I went ahead and took him knowing that the Bears liked him. But I could understand if you felt like that was a little early. But any case, guys, if there's any last minute questions that we have before we go.
I just want to point out that there was no complaints about my draft, but there was about yours.
Yeah, well, I don't think anybody's going to love that you traded away future draft capital, but I do like Zach Frazier a lot, so I kind of do understand it. But
there is a question in here. I'll read it off really quickly because I don't see it here now, but I know where it's at. There was a question about Keenan Allen. Here it is right here. Brian Gilmore is asking, what's your thoughts now on our trade value for Keenan compared to Diggs? I will say, obviously, the compensation doesn't even hold a candle to the two. Obviously, we got the better end of the stick with Keenan Allen. But I do think you have to factor in a few things here. One is age. Two is
They're only a year apart.
What's that?
They're only a year apart in age.
Really? I thought Diggs was younger than that.
Keenan Allen is Keenan Allen is going to be 32 this year, and Stephon Diggs is 30 right now. He's going to be 31. They're only like a year apart.
Well, and that may be, but that could be a big difference too. But I would say that in my thoughts, Diggs has a longer career ahead of him still compared to Keenan Allen. So you have that aspect of it. Keenan's production is there as well, but I think that Diggs gives you more explosive play compared to Keenan Allen. And, you know, that's a good, I think he's also a good person to walk in there in Houston and help CJ Stroud. I think that was a good pickup for them, but definitely as far as compensation goes, like we definitely got the better end of that one with just a fourth round pick, you know, and a two is definitely,
I got zero.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's hilarious. But anyway, in any case,
I hope you guys are just trying to like troll us by saying none or something, because I didn't think they were that damn bad. We got Dallas.
All I know is I'm on the board and you are not. I am on the board and you're not. Anyway, I already lost train of thought. We were talking about Diggs. So yeah, I like the deal for Keenan Allen better. I do like Diggs a lot, but he's clearly got a lot of that diva drama surrounding him right now. And you know, that's not something that the Bears would have, you know, they wouldn't want any part of that. And the money too, obviously Diggs's deal is like still early and new, and that's a lot of money. So yeah, I would definitely say we got the better end of the stick with Keenan Allen.
Yeah, I was going to say, I agree with that. You guys are cracking me up here in the chats, but in any case, yeah, I do feel like that was a much better move. I mean, you're talking about a fourth round pick for someone who's a selfless receiver, who's a veteran, who's very, very good, who knows how to get open. He's going to help your rookie. And then you have a diva who thinks he's not getting the ball enough, who can't wait to get out of town, and you had to force a second round pick to get rid of him. So, and all around, I feel like the Keenan Allen move was much better, no matter how you slice it, whether he's a little bit older or not. So maybe he's not quite as explosive or quite as the player as he once was, but he's still pretty damn good. He's going to help Caleb Williams grow a lot, especially with DJ Moore on the other side. So I liked it. I liked it a lot better than the Diggs move. I've never been a big Diggs fan in the first place. Tim will be the first to tell you that, because Tim's had Stephon Diggs in his fantasy, in our fantasy league a couple times, and I'm not a fan of his, never have been. So, but in any case, yeah, I agree. I agree with that. But it was a great show tonight, guys. You guys had some really good questions in there. It was a great interview with Charleston. Like I said, I do want to eventually, in a couple weeks here before the draft starts, I want us to all do an interactive mock draft here on the show if we can. We're going to do our best to make that happen. So come prepare, guys, if you want to do that with us. It'll be in a couple weeks here right before the draft, the week beforehand. So great. Again, like I said, great show today. We loved all the questions that you guys had. We loved all the content you guys provided, and can't wait for this draft to come up. It's going to be exciting. So anything you want to say, Tim, before I cap us off?
Don't ask us to draft Jackson Powers Johnson at 9, because that's not going to happen. I like him a lot too, guys, but 9's rich. But anyway, yeah, great show tonight, guys. Thanks for being on with us. I love the chat. The chat just gets better and better every week. We, you know, got more of you guys tuning in live every week. So thank you guys. You guys are what make us do this. Cliff is here quoting some Peter Frampton for you.
I knew it was coming from the Frampton shirt, baby. I love it, Cliff. I have this on vinyl.
Yep. Great song, great guitarist. So anyway, thanks, guys. We'll see you guys next week. Peace out. Have a great week.
See you guys.